This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
For a lot of LGBTQIA+ people, distress around food doesn't start with food at all. It starts with shame, with pressure, with being watched, judged, or told, directly or indirectly, that your body is wrong. And that context matters because eating disorders affect LGBTQIA+ people at much higher rates, and yet treatment still isn't consistently safe or affirming. So what's driving that risk and what actually helps when standard care falls short? We're joined by Kai Schweizer from the University of Western Australia and the Kids Research Institute. Kai, welcome to Drive.
Hello, thank you for having me.
When we talk about eating disorders, what are the biggest myths that still shape how we think about or who they affect?
Yeah, so most of the time when people think about eating disorders, they still tend to think about sort of teenage white girls from relatively wealthy families. And while that is some of the people that are affected, eating disorders affect people of all ages and body sizes and cultures, and also of all different genders, sexual orientations, and people with variations of sex characteristics. And unfortunately, when we have that kind of narrow view of who is affected, it means that people with an eating disorder might not realize they have one, and the clinicians they see might also not really be looking at them very closely to see if they need support.
When we talk about LGBTQIA+ people experiencing eating disorders at much higher rates, what stands out to you most when you look at the data behind that?
To me, it's really just how big that disparity is. I guess it's one thing to know that there is higher rates, but to see just how much higher the rates are is quite astonishing. So if we look at, for example, in the U.S., about 9% of the U.S. population has an eating disorder, which is very high. But when they did a study of LGBTIQA+ young people in the U.S., they found that 75% of them either had an eating disorder or were suspecting that they probably did. So that's about 8 times higher rate in LGBTIQA+ people compared to the general population.
Now, a lot of that research, it's pointing to minority stress. What does that look like in everyday life, and how can it shape someone's relationship with food and their body?
Yeah, so minority stress theory is essentially the idea that, you know, the higher rates of mental health issues in LGBTIQA+ people are not that there's something wrong with us. It's not like we have a gene that makes us more likely to have depression. It's not who we are, but rather the way that we're treated that creates that extra risk. And so if someone's experiencing a lot of stigma and discrimination and shame, that might not just make them feel negatively about their sexual orientation or gender identity or variations of sex characteristics. It might also make them feel very negatively about their body or kind of internalize that messaging about their body.
Within the LGBTQIA+ community, Kai, what's the risk like? Is it greater for certain groups of people?
Yeah, so essentially all LGBTIQA+ people have higher risk. So if we look at sort of lesbian, gay, and bisexual people, it's about double the rates of people who are not LGBTIQA+. But then it's about 4 times higher in intersex people and as high as 11 times higher in trans and gender diverse people compared to non-LGBTIQA+ people.
That's huge.
Yeah.
What are some signs that disordered eating has crossed into something perhaps a bit more serious? What are the things that we should look out for, not only in ourselves, but in our friends and family as well?
So disordered eating is sort of the underneath the clinical diagnosis. And so that's when someone's eating behaviors might not be healthy, but they're not causing huge health issues or a lot of distress. Disordered eating behaviors still can benefit a lot from getting treatment. But usually when we consider someone to have kind of crossed over into having an eating disorder is when those behaviors start to really affect their physical health, their emotional well-being, their ability to have a social life, and so forth.
Well, we're chatting with Kai Schweizer from the University of Western Australia and the Kids Research Institute about why eating disorders are more common amongst LGBTQIA+ people. Kai, let's talk about treatment. Treatment's meant to help. I'm concerned that many LGBTQIA plus people report harmful experiences. What tends to go wrong in traditional eating disorder care?
Sometimes care can work pretty well for LGBTQIA plus people, but it really depends on what the underlying reason for their eating disorder is. That for some people, it's got nothing to do with their sexual orientation or gender identity. And so sometimes, you know, the treatment meets that need. But when the source is that minority stress or it's gender dysphoria or another cause related to their sexual orientation or gender identity or variation of sex characteristics, the treatment isn't really designed to focus on or address those needs. And so treatment tends not to work when it doesn't get to the root cause that is kind of at the core of that person's eating disorder.
So what does care look like when it's adapted and is affirming? What does it look like in practice?
So good adapted care is overarchingly LGBTIQA plus affirming and inclusive. So things like, you know, offering options in the system for a different name and pronouns and so forth, and documentation showing a diverse range of people on it. It involves addressing those minority stressors in treatment. So if someone's experiencing a lot of discrimination and stigma, then trying to get to the root of that and put more supports in place to build that resilience and get rid of the things that are causing the discrimination to happen in the first place. It involves, you know, incorporating gender-affirming medical care into treatment when we're talking about gender-diverse people, to make sure that, you know, there's not bodily change from weight gain that's not being, you know, simultaneously addressed with the gender-affirming medical care to address their body image concerns.
Kai, I wonder how much, I mean, as a gay male, there's a lot of pressure to have a very good physique, and I'm wondering how much pressure we put on ourselves as a community in terms that could potentially lead to eating disorders, in terms of the pressure to have that good physique in order to be accepted. What do you reckon?
Yeah, so it's kind of a double-edged sword. In some of my research, we found that, you know, there's the broad societal messaging about what bodies should look like and what an attractive body looks like that we are all affected by. But then we also have these intra-minority ideas inside of our community about what a body should look like. And sometimes those are more intense pressures, or they're competing pressures where you can't meet the societal standard and the community standard at the same time. So there's a lot of conflicting messaging and a lot of pressure that people feel to look a certain way.
That's really interesting. So we can be our own worst enemy there.
Yeah, I think we have, in addition to kind of trying to address the broader societal messaging about these very unrealistic standards, we also have some in-community work to do around more inclusive and size-inclusive ideas about bodies and what an attractive LGBTIQA plus person looks like.
Kai, important chat, and good to find out about the statistics. I didn't realise they were so high.
Yeah, good to chat with you too.
Thank you. That is Kai Schweizer from the Youth Mental Health from the University of Western Australia and the Kids Research Institute. If that conversation has raised anything for you or someone you care about, support is available. You can contact the Butterfly Foundation, 1-800-334-673, QLife, 1-800-184-527, or check out the Joy website for a list of support services. joy.org.au/support.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.